hasn't come up. I can read it.
When it moves on, it'll be there.
Today's reading is Joshua chapter 2, verses 1 to 14. Then Joshua, son of Nun, secretly sent two spies from Shittim. "Go, look over the land," he said, "especially Jericho." So they went and entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there. The king of Jericho was told, "Look, some of the Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land." So the king of Jericho sent this message to Rahab: "Bring out the men who came to you and entered your house, because they have come out to spy out the whole land." But the woman who had taken the two men and hidden them, she said, "Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they had come from." At dusk, when it was time to close the city gate, the men left. "I don't know which way they went. Go after them quickly. You may catch up with them." But she had taken them up to the roof and hidden them under the stalks of flax she had laid out on the roof. So the men set out in pursuit of the spies on the road that leads to the fords of Jordan. And as soon as the pursuers had gone out, the gate was shut. Before the spies lay down for the night, she went up on the roof and said to them, "I know that the Lord has given this land to you, and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water for the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts sank, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above us and on the earth below. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family, because I have shown kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all those who belong to them, and that you will save us from death. Our lives for your lives," the men assured her. "If you don't tell what we are doing, we will treat you kindly and faithfully when the Lord gives us the land."
So we are trying to just make it a little bit more intimate, low-key. If the sound doesn't work, let us know. So Rahab, an unlikely hero. If I stand a bit further back, is that better? Is it less echo? Yeah. Great. Well, what a week it's been for heroes. Yeah. The England football team, can I have a whoop, whoop, whoop? Great. Well done. Nick mentioning them there, the Thailand cave rescue team. And I mean, I don't know if you saw the videos of one of the rescuers when he's coming back through Heathrow. And he's just, you know, he's just typically English. I was just doing my job, really. and then obviously, real one is the orange baby blimp, you know. You know, we all have heroes in some shape or form. I think the world is full of them in all shapes and sizes, whether you stop and think about it or not. I'm sure you've got heroes. What do you look for when you make heroes? Well, maybe you think of famous people. Maybe you think of the royal family or business leaders or great political leaders. And I apologize for the mistake in my slides. Obviously, I'm sure you all know that's Jack Fincham from Love Island. Maybe he's become your love... Don't look at me as if you don't watch it. You got it on catch-up, that's fine. I've got a range of heroes. I'm a huge fan of David Beckham. He's one of the greatest footballers ever to have lived. But more than that, he's been a brilliant role model, I think. I'm a huge fan of Arnold Schwarzenegger, particularly as a politician, and everything that he's drawn his attention to and everything he's achieved. My day-to-day job, I often work in leadership development and leadership programs, and so one of the things we often do is actually explore heroes and leaders and role models and things like that. And in my experience, I think people have heroes for a few reasons. The first is we have heroes to inform us. We have heroes to inform. I was pumping up water balloons for the boys this morning, and a spider came out. And I tell you, I freaked out. Spiders, flies. Anyway, we have heroes to inform us, to raise awareness about stuff, and that's why I've got a picture of Prince Harry there. Whether you're a royalist or not, what he's done to raise awareness of mental health issues, of the need to support our ex-servicemen, our injured servicemen, personally I think is fantastic. Sometimes we have heroes to inspire us, and obviously Martin Luther King, to get us to dream bigger dreams, to see that other things are possible, that our own concept of what is and the limits can be pushed. And we also have heroes to encourage us when we feel we can't go on any further. Maybe you're a fan of Eddie Izzard running his 27 marathons day after day. You know, and that sense of, oh gosh, if he can do 27, I can go out for... Vicky's looking at me, going, that's nothing, I can do that. to get you going that bit further when you feel you're at the end of your limit. This is a guy called Nick Vujicic. Nick Vujicic, and he was born with no arms and no legs. He's an Australian, he now lives in Southern California, he's an evangelist. Search him on YouTube, it's 4.5 minutes of your life, and it will be massively invested. He's incredible, and I've had the privilege of seeing him briefly speak. It's just incredible. Particularly when you see the videos of him swimming, no arms and no legs, that's kind of slightly freaky. I don't want to try and be your hero today, but I do hope that you'll be informed, I do hope that you'll be inspired, and I do hope that we'll all be encouraged as we meet with God and look at this concept. You see, I think we need heroes because... I genuinely believe that at some point, deep down inside, all of us start to wonder things like, am I enough? Can I do it? Will I meet their expectations, whoever they are, whatever their expectations are, will I meet them? And for me, the crucial one is, am I alone? And those questions are normal. And I think they're very real and valuable. You see, society tells us you can do it. Just go for it. You can be the hero. You can go on and achieve everything. But it can all be a bit daunting at times. That's my experience. You know, I've had a mad day today, and it's Nathan's. It's been his 6th birthday party, and we've had a Star Wars party in the garden. I've been a Jedi Master, teaching lightsaber skills. I've been an X-Wing pilot. I've been a Death Star holding. And being a hero dad can be hard. And then you go to work and you know, there's all that expectation and, you know, being a hero worker. And you come to church and you've got to be a prayer warrior. And, you know, you just think, it's a bit exhausting. It's a bit tiring. But you know, the Bible gives us loads and loads of heroes. There's Moses and Esther and Joshua and Ruth and Nathan and Peter and Thomas and Paul. There's loads of them. And many of those Bible heroes meet us with a reality and a balance and an honesty that's refreshing. Because so many of God's hero stories, and I would say a caveat here is, I think particularly the stories of male leaders and heroes, the ones that we read about in the Bible, have a really clear and obvious failure in their past. Okay. Now, maybe it's that the women's stories are not captured that much, but the women hero stories from the Bible, they don't have the same hang-ups as Adam, who was a liar, Moses, who was a murderer, David, who was a murderer and an adulterer, Peter, who denied Jesus, or Saul, who was a violent persecutor of the church. But by his grace, God turns their past story on its head. And he transforms it by creating a future story that will last for eternity. And that is exactly what God wants to do with each and every one of us here. He wants to take our past and transform our future. And so, to me, that brings us on to this unlikely hero story, the story of Rahab, who looks slightly like a pirate. Rahab, you'll have heard of this. Rahab, the prostitute. Some versions have her down as an innkeeper, but the majority stick with it as a prostitute. And in the New Testament, in Hebrews 11 and James 2, it talks about Rahab the prostitute and her faith. And so for the last 3,500 years, this has been the story of Rahab. You know, Rahab the prostitute. Not Rahab the faith-filled convert to Judaism. And I think that's a little bit ridiculous. And I want to highlight three things about Rahab's story that I hope speak to us all here today. I want to look at her background. I want to explore her willingness to trust and who she trusted. And I want to highlight what her focus was on. So let's start by thinking about her background. We know she was a prostitute. And let's not go into the details of that. You all know what that means. She was selling herself to meet a need. Now, some of the scholars suggest that in some ways, she may not have had a choice about this. She was almost certainly a widow. Otherwise, the Bible would have talked about her husband. She may have had children, even though they're not mentioned. And she definitely had an extended family, either living with or near her, that she had to help support. It's likely that her house actually formed part of the walls of the city of Jericho. And we read later on in verse 15 how she lowered the spies down by a rope through the window, for the house she lived in was part of the city wall. So it's likely that travelers came to Jericho because it was a big city at the time, and they needed somewhere to stay. She's close to the gates, so she had space. Maybe the travelers wanted something extra, and she needed the money. It's not like Rahab went to the careers advisor and asked what she should do with her life, and they said, oh, you know what you should try? I mean, how many of us didn't have a choice in our background? You know, I was born and brought up on a council estate. There's nothing I can do about that. I'm from Yorkshire. I have an accent. There's nothing I can do about that. Maybe we don't and haven't done the same stuff as Rahab. But I'm fairly confident that there is stuff in all of our background that we wouldn't want to be known for or referred to. Now, this morning, I mentioned that that's not always a bad thing. You know, you think of our very own dear Glyn, who always introduces himself as a former city accountant. So sometimes what our background is something we want to be known for. It's part of our identity. But not everybody, not every situation. I've recently had to go through the process of having your DBS checks done. You know what DBS is, yeah? Dodgy blinking sorts. I tell you, I'm fairly certain that there was nothing in my background. But man, was I sweating it. And when the paper comes through and you kind of get, it's like you've won the lottery. Yes, I'm clean. But you see, in the New Testament, when we look at the life of Jesus, we read about Jesus looking past people's background and associating with all sorts. Jesus had dinner with prostitutes. Jesus had dinner with tax collectors, not just tax collectors, but dodgy tax collectors. Yeah, I spent time with infected people, with dirty down and outs, those who were rejected by society. And I guess I can't help but think, if Jesus does that, then how can we not do that? And also, I just want to highlight something else about background here that's in verse 1. Nick read it. It's a bit of a kind of short straw reading, this one, because Nick read that Joshua sent two spies from a place called Shittim, which is not a place I'm comfortable using as a name. But it's a big deal. It's a really big deal. Because, as I'm sure you all know, in Numbers 25, verse 1, nobody going to go for that? We hear that when God's people were last in this place, when they were camped there, lots of the men, the local Israelites, started having sex with the local temple women and turning their back on God, going into adultery and idolatry and completely making a mess of things. So, I kind of love the kind of comedy and humor of situations that are described in the Bible. But can you imagine if this is being reported to Joshua? You know, there he is, he's sitting there, he says, just tell me what happened. Okay, so they left from, you know, that place where all that stuff happened. Yeah. And what happened? Well, they went to Jericho and they found somewhere to stay. Oh, brilliant, where did they stay? They stayed with a prostitute. Oh, come on, really? And you can almost hear Joshua despairing because you know what's going to happen in the end here. But again, to me, that emphasizes the point that the background story for Israel as a nation and for Rahab as an individual doesn't define the outcome. We know what happened in that other place, and that's where things start, but it doesn't define the outcome here. And I want to be really clear to those of us who are here that whatever your background is, and I don't know everybody here well, but whatever your background is, it doesn't define your future. Whatever you think will get in God's way, you're wrong. God wants to overcome those things. But to do that, you have to trust. And that's my second point. Rahab trusted God. When she gets her chance to make a change, she takes it. She trusts God, not her own people and her own background. Her own people come and ask her, where are the Israelites? She could have trusted them. Jericho was definitely a big city at the time. We know it had a king. It would have been respected, who would have been respected by the locals. There would have been an armed militia. Maybe he was feared. He kept the city safe, etc. Rahab could have trusted all of those things, but she didn't. She ignored the king and she trusted God. She ignored the king and trusted God. And in my mind, there is absolutely no doubt that if the people of Jericho had found the spies in her house, she'd have been killed. So she took immense risk, even though she didn't know much about these Israelites or their God. She knew enough to trust them. In the short time that they'd stayed at Rahab's house, they did enough for her to know she could trust their God. And it makes me think about my own life and witness. When I meet somebody and I spend a bit of time with them, do I do enough to make them think, wow, I could trust this guy's God. And as we look past, the background to see the future, we need to trust God for that future. Now, that doesn't mean to say it's certainty about the future. Rahab didn't know how the spies would have reacted. We don't always know when we're asked to trust God what the outcomes are going to be. But when the chance came, she took it. And when our chance comes to trust God, I think we need to go for it, all in, like Rahab does. But I think Rahab can go all in and trust God because she also reads the signs around her. And for me, that's my third point. Rahab focuses on the right things. Rahab had heard about this God of Israel, maybe from the spies who were staying with her, maybe the talk of the local travelers who she's had stay at her place. The stories she's referring to here have been around for 30 or 40 years. You know, they're not an immediate story. They're not recent. They happened a generation ago. But Rahab is able to focus on the bigger picture. Rahab reads the mood of the situation and focuses on the right things. You can see what she says. She says, I know that the Lord has given you this land and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We've heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorite east of the Jordan, who were bigger places than Jericho, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted in fear, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on earth below. You know, what she's saying here is your God stops the seas. Your God defeated the big kings. So we're melting in fear. Our hearts are melted. Our courage is gone because of you. For the Lord your God is God. Rahab sees the signs around her, and she knows what she needs to do. She knows that the things she does here with these spies can have a far-reaching impact. And the things we do can have a far-reaching impact, an eternal impact. You know, sometimes being a hero is about big public stuff. There's a picture there. You think of Churchill in the war, very much a public leader, public leadership, public hero. Lots of people regard him as one of the greatest leaders ever. And at other times, being a hero is about the small, the background stuff. And there, that's a picture of Rosa Parks. If you don't know, she, she's considered as starting the the civil rights movement in America. Thanks very much. By sitting on a bus, and when a white man comes and says, "I want that seat. You need to get off the bus," she says no. Okay, and she stays on her bus. It's not a big deal. I mean, it's a big statement for her, but it's a little bus in a fairly small place in the U.S., and it starts a movement that goes on forever and ever and ever. And Rahab sees that the spies are in a desperate situation and they need real, practical help. And she's got the means to help them. She can hide the spies. I mean, she's got the space. She has these plants drying on the roof and she knows what she can do. And verse 4 tells us that when the king's men come and ask about the spies, she's not reacting then. She's already hidden them. She's already taken action. Makes me think slightly in terms of, you know, in church, I feel a little bit like Caroline here, but saying, you know, the rotas. We always need more people on rotas. And sometimes, you know, you can get involved and you can do stuff at the front, like we're all doing. But sometimes as well, there's behind-the-scenes stuff that happens and needs to happen. You know, you would not believe the amount that we are dependent or in some way on Peter, who shifts all the chairs. You know, he's a background hero. Yeah. The people who turn up and tweet and slide and do all the knobs and buttons to make the sound come through. All that kind of thing. So I think there's a challenge for us there in terms of our own ministry, what we're called to, or to be public or to be private, but to be a hero in some way, to take those opportunities. But Rahab has already taken action, and she's not focused on saving herself. She's not interested in preserving her view of the world, her own security. I mean, yes, she talks about being saved, but you know, she's not about extending that with the king of Jericho. Her focus is on acting to bring about God's kingdom. Her focus is on God. In this case, quite literally, because Jericho is the first city that the Israelites conquer as they establish a new kingdom. And when we act as God's hero by doing what God wants, when it's easier not to do it, we're building that kingdom. That could be through, you know, you think the public stuff in a work environment, you know, that might be a speaking out against injustice. I mean, Kerry's work all the time is in that kind of area of speaking out publicly about injustice. But sometimes in work, the hero aspect might be that sense of, actually, I'm going to do something for somebody and I know I'm not going to get any thanks. I'm not going to get any gratitude. I'm actually just going to probably create more work for myself down the line. But that's the right thing to do. That's the godly thing to do. I think in those moments, we're being a hero. And our focus is on God. But I want to challenge us really, you know, where is our focus? Is it on seeing what God might want to do through us and in us? Is it on finding the opportunities each and every single day to trust God and to step into his plan for our future? Or are we sticking to our view of the past and what things might have been like? And it makes me think of Simon's licensing last week. Did anyone go?
Yeah.
Right. Didn't he look pretty? And as I think about it, Simon was my vicar, but he's my friend as well. And we've chatted about it on and off the record. And I remember him saying it was 18 months ago that he came away from praying and thought, maybe I'm the answer to these prayers. Maybe I could be the answer. And from then on, Simon started to read the signs around him. I mean, he could have stayed here. He could have. I'm sure no one would have moved him on. But Simon's focus was on what God was doing. And as he made that his focus, a plan became clear. Plan which doesn't make sense to me, but made sense to him because his focus was on God. And Simon and Heather have gone all in. They've literally, you know, given up house and home and moved. Eventually they'll move out. But that focus was on what God is doing there. So to summarize, you know, heroes. When we look at some of the heroes in the world, so often it's about what they can do. You know, Winston Churchill was a fantastic orator and leader and strategist. It's about what they can do. It's about what they can achieve. They're my hero because of such and such. Somebody said this morning a hero was Elon Musk because he's trying to save the world. Yeah, great. But Bible heroes shift that focus. And it's not about us. It's about God. And frankly, I'm really glad about that because I'm a pretty useless Jedi Knight. I'll fail you, I guarantee it. I'll fail you week in, week out. I'll let you down. I'll let you down with my behavior, with my attitude. I'll let you down with my character. I'll let you down with all sorts of things. But God won't. God won't let you down. So he can work through us. He can work for us. He can work around us. He can work despite us to be that hero, to help us be heroes for others. And so it is that our unlikely hero, Rahab, She ignored her past. She trusted God. And she put her focus on him. She went all in like this, this woman from a mud bath in Turkey. She went all in and she threw herself heart and soul on God. And as a result, I find this amazing that here we are discussing her 3,500 years later. Thinking about how much of a hero she was. Let's just pray, just as we finish. Father, I thank you that despite our failings, you love us. Father, I thank you that despite our past, you have a glorious future planned for us. I thank you that you are dependable, that we can throw ourselves on you, heart and soul, 100% trusting that you'll catch us, you'll embrace us. I thank you that whereas other people have failed us and let us down, you haven't, and your son Jesus is perfect. And I also ask, Lord, for all of us, that you would work by your Holy Spirit, dwelling, transforming, redeeming us day in, day out. You will work in us to see those hero opportunities and to seize them, whether they bring glory or not. To see those opportunities and seize them, and in doing so, advance your kingdom.